I want to just begin by thanking Mrs. Shulman for inviting me to give this shir on Tisha B'Av. Baruch Hashem, over the years I've had the privilege to be able to share some words of Torah through the vehicle of Women's Institute of Torah with this wonderful audience on Tisha B'Av afternoon. And every year, I find it an incredible struggle to be able to figure out what to focus on. Because the truth is, it's easy to focus on a topic. So, we could speak about Shmiras HaLashon, we could speak about being careful with one's speech, we could speak about Chesed, engaging and performing acts of kindness. There's no shortage to the different topics that could be covered in a gathering like this. But I feel that we have to strive for something more. Because today is not just any day. But today is a day when I think many of us are really open and receptive to things that perhaps during the rest of the year we may not be able to absorb, we may not be able to comprehend, we may not be willing to accept. I think on a day like today, especially by now 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so many of us have already cried so many tears. So many of us have already reflected on all that has been lost. But there's something amazing that happens. That when you reflect on 2,000 years of collective trauma, when you reflect on 2,000 years of collective loss, when you really begin to think about all of the heartbreak that we have experienced as a people for the last 2,000 plus years, there's an amazing realization that comes to mind, which is that we each have an incredible responsibility to make up for the loss. We each have an awesome responsibility to try to fill the voids that have been created through 2,000 years of tragic loss. It's not just enough to have responsibility for one's family. It's not just enough to have responsibility for one's friends. Not just enough even to have responsibility for one's community. But because we have lost so much, each of us has an amplified level of responsibility towards our klal, towards our people, to not just lead good and meaningful lives as individuals, but to somehow figure out how we're going to make a difference for the collective plight of Am Yisrael. How somehow our life is going to matter. See, I will tell you, I deal with a lot of death in my profession. And I will tell you that on more than one occasion, I've been at the deathbed of someone who is uttering their last words. And I can't tell you how many times those last words are filled with remorse and regret that life could have been more. No one ever says, I should have spent more time at the office. No one ever says, oh, I should have caught another Orioles game. No one ever says, you know, I really should have taken up another hobby. I just didn't have enough hobbies in my life. No one ever says, I wish I made more friends. No one ever says, I wish I were more popular. But people express all kinds of remorse and regret for not actualizing their potential. And what I'd like to try to do today is to try to figure out how to actualize that potential. How could we harness the heartbreak? Because Tisha B'Av is a debilitating day. If a person really allows themselves to feel, the reality is most of us don't allow ourselves to feel. Whether we do it consciously or subconsciously, we often erect an emotional barrier. I'm willing to allow myself to feel to a certain degree, but I can't open up too much. Because if you really open your heart and you open your soul on a day like today, like Tisha B'Av, it's overwhelming. It's absolutely overwhelming. Could it be that a person could possibly withstand the pain of 1.5 million children lost during the Holocaust? Could it be that a person could possibly withstand the pain of our ancestors, Al Naros Bavel, as they stood on the banks of the rivers by Babylon, suffering such staggering loss in the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? That's why if you'll notice on Tisha B'Av, there's no like unique avoda. There's nothing actively we're supposed to do. Because the truth is, if you really commemorate Tisha B'Av in the right way, you become a heap of tears. To a certain degree, you become so emotionally overwhelmed that it's difficult to try to even figure out what positive dynamic activities and results could come about from a day like this. But we also know that the fundamental nature of Tisha B'Av changes. We've spoken about this in the past. We know that there's a dramatic shift that occurred at Chatzos, at midday today, 1:12, 1:13, a dramatic shift. And that shift went from mourning to rehabilitation. The first part of Tisha B'Av is spent on the floor. The first part of Tisha B'Av is spent not exchanging greetings with one another. Because the first part of Tisha B'Av is allowing ourselves to feel the pain, not to mask it, not to suppress it, not to compartmentalize it, but to feel it. But now we have to figure out what to do with all of that pain. How do we take that heartbreak, harness it, and transform it into dynamic life energy? And that's what I would like to try to focus on today. Our shiur today is dedicated Le'ilui Nishmas Chaim Yishayahu Alav HaShalom Ben Yosef. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. I want to begin with a section from the Jerusalem Talmud, the Talmud Yerushalmi, that I think highlights this idea that we just spoke about. The Gemara says the following: Ov dehava bechad Yehudai, dehava kaim ridi. There was a Jew who was once plowing his field. Gaas tursei kumai. Suddenly, his ox began to cry out. Avad chad arvai v'shamakala. An Arab walked by. He heard the Jew's ox crying out, and he said, Amarle, bar yudai, shari turech v'shari kan kanech. Da'charev beis mikdasha. Jew, unhitch your ox, sell your plow, your temple has been destroyed. Ga'as zimintinius. The ox cried out a second time. Amarle bar yudai, kater turech, the kater kan kanech. The Arab said to the Jew, Jew, put the yoke back on your ox, bring your plow to the field. Tahayalid Malka Mashiha, because your Messiah has just been born. Hear this? First time the ox cries out, Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Second cry, Mashiach has been born. Amarle, Mashme, the Jew says to the Arab, tell me, what is the name of this child who has just been born? What is the name of this Messiah, this Mashiach? Menachem. His name is Menachem, which of course is a very fitting name for Mashiach, the Consoler. Amarle Mashme Davuye, what's his father's name? Amarle Chizkia. Father's name is Chizkia. Amarle Minhahu, what city is he from? Amarle Min Biras Malka de Beis Lechem Yehuda. He's from the city of Biras Malka in the tribal area of Yehuda. Beis Lechem. Listen to what this man does. This Jewish farmer now is desperate to find baby Mashiach. He's desperate to find this future Redeemer. Azal Zabin Turi, this Zabin Kankani, this Ovid, Zabin Levadin Lemeinuka. So what's the best way to find a little baby? So what does he do? He sells his plow, he sells his ox, and he becomes a diaper salesman. Figuring that if I sell diapers, inevitably I'm going to get to know the local baby population, and somehow I'll find this little baby. I'll find this little baby, Menachem ben Chizkiah. V'havo ayol karye v'nafka karye ad da'ol ahu karta. V'havion konashya zabnin v'ima de Menachem lo zabna. He makes it to the city of Biras Malka. He's selling his wares, the diapers, the wet wipes, whatever else. All the mothers, the young mothers are coming to purchase these different wares for their children. But the mother of Menachem is not coming to purchase anything for her son. He overhears an incredible conversation. Shama kalam dinashye amrin imei de Menachem, imei de Menachem. I see zubnin librach. He hears the other women saying, mother of Menachem, come. Buy some diapers, buy some things for your son. She gives a heartbreaking answer. Amra baya ana michkune sa'aynina n'yisrael d'biyoma dis alid ichrov beis mikdasha. She said, I don't want anything to do with this child. Because he was born on the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. What does that say about him? What does that say about his spiritual quality, about his neshama? I don't want it. Every time I see him, I'm reminded about the destruction of the temple. Every single time I see him, I'm reminded about our national individual heartbreak. I don't want to take care of the child. Amalei, rechitze, anon de beragli charif, u beragli mitbenei. The diaper salesman hears this entire conversation going on between the mother of Menachem and these other women. And he says to the mother of Menachem, oh, by the way, you know, I heard something interesting. That on the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that's also the day that Mashiach is born. On the very day of death and destruction is the very day in which the seeds for salvation were planted. She hears this. And her maternal proclivities are awakened within her. Suddenly she's ready to take care of this child. Amalei, but she says to the man, to the diaper salesman, Leslie Preeton, I have no money. Amalei, Ruma Echbasle, I see Zubninle in Les Kumach Yoma din Basayomin Ani Asavinasin. He says to her, don't worry, don't worry. Take what you need now. I'll be back here next year and you can pay me then. The diaper salesman's so happy that he has found the baby Mashiach. He has found Menachem ben Chizkiah. He has found the little boy who is going to grow up to be the savior of the Jewish people. Nasiv Basar Yomini comes back a year later. Allahi karta amar la. Mahu meyenuka of it. So he runs over to the mother of Menachem and he says, he wants this anew. What is your baby up to? Tell me. What is he doing? How is he matured? How is he developed? What is he doing in life now? Amarle, she says to him, I have to tell you. Min shaita dechimasni. The moment you left town last year, asun ruchim. A strong wind came, swept my baby from my arms, and I haven't seen him since that day. What the Gemara is trying to impress upon us is on a day like today, Mashiach is in reach. In a day like today, redemption, salvation, a different future, a different narrative for our people is within reach. It's here. But what happens all too often in life is that when those beautiful moments present themselves, we fail to act on them, and they're just swept away by the winds of time. It is on this Tisha B'Av afternoon when the seeds and the saplings of redemption are here right in front of us. And all it requires of us is to put our minds to hold on to it. To put our minds to actualize it. How can we do that? I want to show you another Gemara. Take a look at number 3. The Gemara Maseches Makos. This is a very well-known Gemara. Writes, Ukvar hayu Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Akiva mahalchem baderech. These great rabbis were all walking together on a journey, and while walking on the road, and pam achos hayu olim liYerushalayim. They were walking to Jerusalem. Kevan sheegiu laharat sofim karu bigdehem. And when they reached Hartzofim, they tore their clothing. Kevan sheegiu laharabayis, after they reached the Temple Mount, ra'u shuel shayotza mibeis kodesh hakadoshim. They saw a fox emerging from the space that was the Holy of Holies. Hischilu hein bochin Rabbi Akiva mitzachik. The rabbis, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yehoshua, all started crying, and Rabbi Akiva started laughing. Amar lo, mipnei ata mitzachik. Akiva, what's going on with you? How can you laugh at a moment like this? We just saw a fox walk out of the Holy of Holies and you're laughing. Amar lahem mipnei atem bochim. Rabbi Akiva counters to his rabbinic colleagues, why are you crying? Amru lo makom shekasul bo v'hazar ha-karev yimas. V'achshav shualim holchu bo v'lo nifke. So they say to Rabbi Akiva, the place where the Torah tells us that anyone other than the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, cannot enter into. And now suddenly that place has been so profoundly profaned that even a fox could just go in and out. Amru lahem, that's our crime. Rabbi Akiva says, oh, that's why I'm laughing. Why? And he goes on to discuss, he contrasts two different prophecies. He says the Navi links the prophecy of the prophet Uriah with the prophet Zechariah. By Uriah it says that Sion, that Zion, will be plowed over like a barren field. And the prophecy ultimately again of Zechariah, if you look at the last two lines, Zechariah it says, Od yeshvu zekenim uzekenos berechobos Yerushalayim. The day will come when old men and old women will sit down in the streets of Jerusalem. The day will come when Yerushalayim will be filled with life. The day will come when the sounds of simcha, the sounds of joy, will be heard in every corner of our holy city. And Rabbi Akiva said to his other rabbinic colleagues, now that I see that the prophecy of Uriah has been fulfilled, that Zion literally has been laid waste, that there are foxes that are walking around in the area of the Holy of Holies, I know with absolute certainty that the prophecy of Zechariah will also be fulfilled. I know for a fact that life will come back to Jerusalem. I know that at some point, at some time, everything will be okay. And look how the Gemara ends off. Belashon hazeh amru lo, they say to Rabbi Akiva, Akiva nechamtanu, Akiva nechamtanu. Akiva, you have consoled us. Akiva, you have consoled us. And this particular story always bothered me a little bit. First of all, what is it exactly about Rabbi Akiva's statement that was so consoling? What was it about his statement that was filled with such consolation? And the second question, which is a more technical question, it's not a riveting question by any means. Technical question, why did they have to repeat it twice? Why not just say, Akiva nechamtanu, Akiva, you consoled us? Why Akiva Nechamtanu, Akiva Nechamtanu? So the simple answer, of course, at least to the first question, is that Rabbi Akiva's major dominant trait was unbridled optimism. You know, a good piece of advice: always have at least one friend who's an eternal optimist. Because those are the best people to surround yourself with. Because there's no shortage of doom and gloom personalities. No shortage of people who are just waiting for the next shoe to drop. No waiting for people for life just to mess them over and go wrong. But every once in a while you stumble upon a personality who always sees the glass half full. Who always says, you know what? It's going to be okay. I don't know how. I don't know why. I don't know when. I don't know where. But it's going to be okay. So on the most basic level, that's what's happening over here in this beautiful passage in the Talmud. The rabbis are crushed by the enormity of destruction. They're crushed by the contrast. Just a few years ago, they were present when the high priest would enter into the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And now what? Now there are animals walking through there. It's overwhelming. It's emotionally debilitating. It's spiritually challenging. And Rabbi Akiva just simply says, look, it's going to be okay. When, Akiva? I don't know. How is it going to happen? I don't know. But you just have to live with the hope that somehow, some way, it's going to be okay. But perhaps there's another insight into this Gemara. And with this, we're going to go on a little bit of a detour. Take a look at number 4. The Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah tells another gripping story. A story, actually, that we spoke about this morning in the Tisha B'Av Kinos. This morning we read about the Asara Harugei Malchus. We read about the 10 martyrs. And one of those martyrs was a man by the name of Rabbi Hanina ben Trajion. What happened to Rabbi Hanina ben Trajion, says the Gemara number 4. U'bechazarasan matza'u Rabbi Hanina ben Trajion shayoshev va'osek batorah. Rabbi Hanina ben Trajion committed the capital offense of teaching Torah in public. So they found him teaching Torah, and they decided they were going to execute him. What did they do? Hevi'uhu v'karchuhu b'sefer Torah. They wrapped Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon in a sefer Torah, v'kifua chavilei zemuros, v'etzisu bahenas ha'ar. They wrapped him in a sefer Torah, they surrounded him with twigs, and they lit the wood on fire. They were going to burn Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon alive with his Torah. V'heviyu sifugin shal tzemer v'shara'um b'mayim, v'enichum alibo k'dei shelo teitzei nishmaso mehira. And to prolong his suffering, they put tufts of wet wool on top of his heart so that he would not expire quickly in these flames. If you can imagine this scene, B'chanina ben Chaja, one of the greatest rabbanim of the generation, wrapped in his beloved Torah, set a fire, and his family is forced to watch. Amar lo bito, Abba, erebekach. His daughter cries out to him, Father, I can't watch this. I can't watch it. And Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon gives a very moving answer, but I want to skip down a few lines. Amar lo kletz tenori. The Roman executioner sees all of this going on. And he sees Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon consoling his family. He sees Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon consoling his students. And he realizes that they've made a grave mistake by killing such a righteous man. So the executioner turns to Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon and says, Rebbe, im ani marba hashalheves v'notel sipugin shal tzemre me'al libecho, atzem mevi'ani l'chaye olam abo. The executioner says, Rebbe, if I intensify the fire and I remove the tufts of wool from your heart, will you guarantee me a place in the world to come? Amar lahen hein. Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon said yes. Hishavali. The executioner says to Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon, swear to me that you're going to bring me to the world to come. Mishpalo. He swore. In that moment, the executioner removed the tufts of wool, intensified the fire, and Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon died instantaneously. Af hu kafatz v'nafal l'socha'ar. In that moment, the executioner jumped into the fire himself, ending his life. Yatzis sabas kol v'amar Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon uklatz tenuri mizumonin hein l'chai olam haba. A voice boomed out from the heaven and said, in that moment, Rabbi Hanina ben Trajon and the executioner are both invited to spend eternity in the world to come. Bachar Rabbi Va'amar. When the great sage Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi would retell this story, he would cry. And he would say, Yesh kana olamo b'sha'achas, v'yesh kana olamo b'kamashanim. There are some people who literally acquire their world. There are some people who give meaning to their life in one moment. And there are others for whom it takes years to find meaning within existence. Another Gemara, number 5. This is the famous story of Elazar ben Drudja. This is a story actually that I've shared with you in other contexts. This perhaps is one of the most mentioned Gemaras in the realm of tshuva, in the realm of repentance. Elazar ben Drudja was an exceptionally immoral individual. And the Gemara recounts that there was not one harlot that he did not frequent. And the Talmud tells a story that one time he heard about a harlot overseas and he decided that he was going to pay her a visit as well. And as he's getting ready to commit the act of immorality, she whispers into his ear, the same way that this whisper cannot go back into my mouth, Elazar ben Drudja is beyond salvation. Now, she didn't really whisper it. She wasn't in the business of giving Musar. He heard that voice himself. And Elazar ben Drudja realizes something has to change in a dramatic fashion. And he starts pleading with all the different parts of heaven to intercede on his behalf. And finally, in number 5, he comes to the conclusion, Amar, Ein hadavar taloi ela bi. The matter, if I want to change, if I want to turn around my life, the truth is, the heavens can't help me. The mountains can't help me. Even God can't help me. If I want to change around my life, Ein hadavar taloi ela bi. It's all up to me. And what did he do? Hiniach rosho ben birka v'ga b'bichia ad shiyata sanishmaso. He began to cry. He put literally his head between his legs like a baby, like a fetal position. He curled up into a ball and he began to cry until he died. Yatsa sabasko v'amar Rabbi Elazar ben Drudja mizuman l'chai ha'olam haba. A heavenly voice came out and said, Elazar ben Drudja is invited to eternity in the world to come. And look at the underlined piece again. Bacha Rebbe. The same Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, like the previous Gemara, whenever he would retell this story, he would always cry. He would say, Yesh kana olama b'kama shanim. There are some people who only acquire their world in many years. V'yesh kana olama b'sha'achas. And there are some people who acquire their world, give meaning to their existence in one moment. But look at number 6. The Maggid of Mezrich, in his commentary in this Gemara, says something amazing. Yesh kana olamo b'sha'achas perish harav ha-magid marina harav rabinu dov ber. The Maggid of Mezrich, you can see this little biography here. See, everyone translates, says the Maggid, sha'a, as a moment. And so what it sounds like is, there are some people who it takes them a lifetime to find meaning in their life, and there are some people who find a lifetime of meaning in one moment. The Rebbe says, that's not what sha'a means. It doesn't mean a moment. He says, sha'a hu lashon pana. Sha'a means to turn. What does that mean? Kima'amar ha'kasuf ve'al kayin ve'al minchaso lo sha'a. He brings a proof from the episode of Cain and Hevel when the two brothers brought their offerings to God. God accepted Hevel's offering, but the Torah says that to Cain and to his offering, lo sha'a, God did not turn. God did not turn his attention. Therefore, says the Rebbe something amazing. That Yesh Kana Olamo B'Sha'achas means that sometimes you give meaning to your entire life with one decision. Sometimes you make a decision to turn your life in one direction. You make a decision to turn your existence in a little bit of a different kivun, a little bit of a different direction than the way I've been living until now. And sometimes that one little directional shift, sometimes that one little change of orientation, that sha'achos, just repositioning myself a little bit, puts me on a dramatically different course, a dramatically different trajectory. And then the Maggid of Mezrich says something that I promise you is going to be life-altering. Look at number 7. He says, look at that phrase, Yesh Kana Olamo B'Sha'achos. There are those who acquire or endow their life with meaning because they made one right turn. Says the Maggid something amazing. What letters do you see in there? Akiva. Akiva. Akiva, different order. Yesh Kana Olamo B'Sha'achos. There are those who are able to acquire meaning in their life through one shift, through one turn, through one decision. Take a look at number 8. This was the essence indeed of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara tells a story that we're all familiar with. Rabbi Akiva is kadshis le barta de bar kalba savua. You know, Rabbi Akiva married a very rich girl. He married his father, married Rachel, his wife, was the daughter of one of the 3 richest men in Yerushalayim. In fact, his name, he was known as Kalba Savua. Now, Kalba Savua literally means satiated dog. Not very popular on the baby naming lists. Why was he called Kalba Savua? The Gemara says, because he was so generous to the poor that even if you were starving and you entered into his home, even if you were as ravenous as a dog, he would take care of you. He would wine and dine you until you were sated. Rabbi Akiva marries Rachel. There's only one problem, which is Adra Hanomi Kol Mechaseh. Kalba Savua, Rachel's father, was vehemently opposed to the marriage. Here I am, the richest man in Jerusalem. I want my daughter to marry a Torah scholar. I want my daughter to marry someone who possesses incredible, voluminous amounts of Torah knowledge. I want my daughter to marry someone who's a Balmidos. I want all of the... Who does she marry? An illiterate shepherd? A nothing? Remember, Rabbi Akiva, or Akiva, was the farmhand of Kalba Savua. Can you imagine this? You're the richest man and your daughter runs off and elopes with a farmhand? So he makes an edir, he makes an oath that his daughter and his son-in-law cannot get any benefit from his property. So they're destitute and poor. And listen to this story. Bisitva havugana beitivna. The young couple, Rachel and Akiva, have absolutely no money to their name. So what do they do? Where do they live? They rent a little space in a barn. And they slept on straw. If you can imagine this scene. They woke up in the morning and Akiva is picking the straw out of his kala's hair. Picking the straw out of his hair. And he says to her, and I could only imagine with tears in his eyes, "I hava li ramina lech yushayim didava. If I had the money, I would buy you Jerusalem of gold." It's referring to a specific type of ornament that brides used to wear. Brides in Yerushalayim used to wear a beautiful golden tiara. And Rabbi Akiva here expressing such pain. "I wish I could take care of you in the way you deserved. I wish I could take care of you in the way that is befitting for a woman, an Eshes Chaya like you." And what does Rachel say? Amra leh, You want to take care of me? Zil have bei rav. Go to yeshiva. I don't need the Yerushalayim shel Zahav. I appreciate the sentiment. I appreciate your willingness and your desire to give me something beautiful. But if you want to really do something for me, then make something of yourself. And the Gemara goes on. Azul tarti sireshinin kamed Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Akiva goes off to yeshiva and he spends 12 years in the yeshiva Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yoshua. And after 12 years, he's back. And what was Rachel doing that entire time? The Medrash relates that essentially she was a cleaning lady because that was the only work she could find. So Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva, the daughter of Kalba Savua, is cleaning houses in order to be able to sustain herself, to send a little bit of money to her husband, but this is what she wanted. She comes back, 12 years later, Rabbi Akiva is coming back, and as he's walking into his house, he overhears a conversation between his wife Rachel and another person. And this man, this older man, is mistreating, he's verbally abusing Rachel, he's saying, You fool, you think he's in yeshiva? He probably ran off with another woman. He's probably doing all kinds of other stuff, and you're here like a fool. You left your father's home, you have nothing. And Rachel says, and the man said, you think he's never going to come back. And Rachel says, if it was up to me, I'd have him stay another 12 years. And Rabbi Akiva says, Amar, ho'il v'yahavis li rishusa. So that's what my wife wants. He turned right back around without even stepping foot in his home and learned for another 12 years. Akiva comes back 24 years later with 48,000 Talmidim. Akiva leaves the house. And Rabbi Akiva comes back. And do you know why? Because Rachel made one decision. Because in that moment, where she could have easily have said, you know what, I'd love that Yerushalayim shel Zahav. Why don't you go out, find a profession, and one that you'll be able to provide me with all the creature comforts that I want. She said, what's most important to me is that you make something of yourself. And in that moment when Rabbi Akiva came back after 12 years, and I could guarantee you that he wanted more than anything to be able to see his beloved Rachel, he said, now is a defining moment. Now is a Shah Achas. I have to decide which way to turn. Do I turn to my house? Or do I turn back to the yeshiva? And he made a decision, a difficult one. But it's that decision who made him who he was. And I want to be clear. I am not at all suggesting these decisions for any of us. I'm not at all suggesting that this is the model we emulate. I'm using this Gemara to make us understand the concept that yesh kana olama b'sha'achas. That there are times in life when we define the entire trajectory and nature of our life with a decision that we make. Rachel created Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva at most gets 50% of credit for the man who became. Because the truth is, he didn't become who he was on his own volition. He became who he was because his wife made a decision. Make something of yourself. Here's what I want from you, from life. And Rabbi Akiva, when he made that fateful decision to go back instead of going home, that's yesh kana olam b'sha'achas. That's the Maggid of Mezrich says. That's the meaning of the name Akiva. The name Akiva has the letters yesh kana olam b'sha'achas. We are who we are because not of all of the decisions we make. But our lives are what they are. We are the people we become very often because of the singular decisions we make. And if you take a look at number 9, the Gemara Maseches Brachos writes, Remember, Rabbi Akiva was also one of the 10 martyrs, being led out to death at the hands of the Romans. When they were taking him out to his death, it was the time for Shema. They were literally tearing the flesh off his body with iron combs. And what does Rabbi Akiva doing? He was saying Shema. Amrulo Talmidav Rabbeinu Adkan. His students said, Rebbe, is this really the expectation? You're being murdered slowly. It's okay, you don't have to say Shema. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be fine with you. You've done so much. Do you really have to say Shema now? And look what he said. Amar Lahem, Kol Yomai Hayisi Mitzta'ar Al Pasuk Zeh B'chol Nafshicha. Every single day I read the Pasuk that says that we're supposed to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of our heart. And the Gemara understands that to mean Afilu Notal Es Nishmascha. Even if God takes my soul, I have to be ready to give that up for him and serve him like that. Amarti, Masai Yavo Liyodi V'kayimena. And I always wondered, you know, how does a person fulfill that? Serving God with all of your soul, giving up your life for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'achshav Sheba Liyodi Lo HaKayimena. And now when I have this opportunity to serve God with my last breaths, I'm not going to take it. Hayama'arich Be'echad. He elongated, prolonged the word of Echad until he died while concluding the word of Echad. What's happening over here in this Gemara? Rabbi Akiva is literally saying to his students, he's saying, this is my Shah Achas. There's an opportunity here for me. There's something here for me to accomplish. How could I simply let it slip through my fingers? Yes, this is not the opportunity I wanted, not the opportunity I looked forward to, not the opportunity I pined for, but this is the opportunity that's in front of me. How can I not take proper advantage of it? Even in the midst of this barbaric event, Rabbi Akiva understood that he was being given an opportunity and he was resolute in his desire to seize it and to actualize. Now let's come full circle. Remember a little while ago, we quoted that Gemara Maseches Makos, that Rabbi Akiva was walking with the other rabbis. And remember again, they're crying and he's laughing. And he gives his explanation that now that the Beis Hamikdash is in ruin, now that that prophecy has come true, I have no doubt that the other prophecies of redemption and salvation will also come true. And the rabbis said, Akiva Nechamtanu, Akiva Nechamtanu. And we asked, why do they have to say Akiva Nechamtanu? Just say Nechamtanu, you've consoled us. And why do they have to say it twice? And perhaps what's happening over here is something dramatically different. Perhaps what they're saying to Rabbi Akiva is, Rabbi Akiva, you know what consoles us? All right, that's a nice vart, that's a nice insight about the prophecies. But you know what really consoles us? Is Akiva, is you, and the life that you've led. Because Akiva, you are the paradigmatic example of Yesh Kana Olamo B'Sha'achas. You see, because after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and after all of the horrific events that we remember during Kinos and over the course of Tisha B'Av, it could lead you to an erroneous conclusion, which is, there's no hope. There's no hope. Look, the truth is, you know, there's an incredible thing that we experience as a people. Every single terrible thing that happens, we always think, it's got to be the end to our tzaros. So a year ago, 3 beautiful boys were kidnapped and murdered. Can't get worse than that. Then there's a massacre in Har Nof. And then there's this. And then there's that. And the problem is a person can begin to think, my gosh, there's so much sadness. There's so much heartbreak. What am I supposed to do? It's almost tempting to go ahead and throw your hands up. Be miyaish, give up. Ribono Shalom, you know what? If you want to change these circumstances, you're going to have to change something. Because me, I'm helpless. And Rabbi Akiva teaches us that that is not the case. My dear friends, there are many circumstances in our life that we can't control. It is true in our personal lives. Many of us have incredibly overwhelming challenges. whether it's with health, whether it's with parnasa, whether it's with our children, whether it's in our marriages. And sometimes, for those challenges, there are not necessarily answers. You know, as we get older, we think part of the hallmark of youth is that unbridled optimism that every single problem has an answer. It's not true, as we know. There are some problems that just simply remain problems. But even in the midst of those difficult circumstances, there's always something you can do to pull out a little bit of redemption, to pull out a little bit of happiness, to pull out a little bit of joy, even from the most compromised of circumstances. Your life didn't turn out the way you had hoped. Join the club. I bet for most of us, life has not turned out the way we hoped. So you have a choice. You could cry. You can say tehillim. You could chuckle a little more during davening. Those are all good things also. You could stand by the ruins of the life you wanted and bemoan the fact that life was not fair to you. Or you could pick yourself up, gather yourself together, say, these are my circumstances. You know what? I did not choose them. And the truth is, I would give anything to change them. But this is what it is. And now that these are my circumstances, I ask myself one simple question. How can I maximize them? How could I make the most of them? How could I take what is sometimes a compromised life and squeeze a little bit more meaning and squeeze a little bit more hope and squeeze a little bit of joy at what is sometimes characterized by an existence of tears? This is true as a people. If you look at our history, and again, all you need to do is go through the kinos. The truth is, if you look at the continuum of the Jewish existence, there's probably more suffering than happiness. Bless you. But you know what the amazing part is? The amazing part is that we never allow ourselves to be defined by that suffering. Yes, we mourn. Yes, we cry. We take out one day. Do you know that if we were to write kinos for every single tragedy that happened to the Jewish people, we could say kinos a whole day for an entire year? But that's not what we do. Because we are the people of resolve. We are the people of strength. So we mourn our losses, we cry our tears. And then you know what we do at midday? You know what happened at midday 2,300 years ago? You know what happened about now, 2,000 years ago? Right now is when the Beis HaMikdash was set ablaze. Beis HaMikdash was set on fire on the 9th of Av, the afternoon of the 9th of Av, and continued to burn into the 10th. And yet it's at that very moment, says of Soloveitchik, that we get up from the floor, we relax the standards of our mourning. Do you know why? Because it's a message for us for all eternity. We will not be defined by compromised circumstances. We will not yield to compromised circumstances. I will not throw in the towel simply because life is more difficult than I thought it would be. I will not give in simply because life is not going according to the plan I had. I will try to figure out how to maximize my circumstances because I know Yesh Kana Olamo B'Shah Achas. I know that there are so many beautiful opportunities all around me. So many magnificent moments. And if I just keep my eyes open, I will be able to infuse my life with so much meaning. In other words, that our goal in life is to become an Akiva. Our goal in life is to become Yesh Kana Olama B'Sha Achas people. To look out for our opportunities, and they are all around us. To look out for our opportunities to better ourselves. You know, we live in a time, just quite amazing, that, you know, it used to be that a person could say, I don't have a background. I didn't go to day school or yeshiva or seminary. I don't know how to learn. You know, the amazing part is we live in a time where all you have to do is use this thing called Google, and you just put in Torah, and you'll be amazed what comes out. How many opportunities we have for chesed, to help and to do for others. Yes, we're all busy with our lives. There's no question. Everybody is very busy. And somehow, even people who are not so busy are still very busy. Everyone's busy. There's time. We make time for recreation. We make time to do a lot of things that are not all that important. There's time to do chesed. There's time to extend a hand to another. And I'm not talking about writing a check. Writing a check is very nice. Talking about chesed with your yadayim, with your hands. Rolling up your sleeves and actively doing something to better the life of the other. We may have compromised circumstances as a nation and as individuals. But yesh kana olamo b'sha'achas. There are so many beautiful moments all around us. All we need to do is perhaps stop telling ourselves we're so busy. Open our eyes a little bit more. And we'll be amazed to see the beautiful moments that are all around us. We'll be amazed to see how we can become Akivas. And this is what the Gemara is saying. The rabbis are crying. The Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. There are foxes and who knows what else running through the place that was the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And they see Akiva. And what does Akiva represent to them? Akiva was the man who, because he made a decision, because his wife made a decision, in the midst of abject poverty, in the midst of difficult circumstances, they chose to take advantage of their opportunities and they made something great of themselves. They see Rabbi Akiva and they say, Akiva nechamtanu. Akiva, you, not your words, but who you are. Yesh kana olama b'sha'achos. You've consoled us because you've told us that there's hope even in the midst of difficult circumstances. That there's meaning even in a life that hasn't gone exactly as I've planned. That there's the ability to go out and make something of myself even if my circumstances are much more difficult than I had ever envisioned. Akiva nechamtanu. Akiva nechamtanu. It is you, Rabbi Akiva, who has taught us that we all have, and the beautiful part is, it's not just sha'achas, it's not just one moment for all of us. Every single moment is a moment, and there are multiple moments throughout the day, throughout the lifetime. All we need to do is live life with eyes open, ears open, and most importantly, an open heart. And we'll begin to see all of those beautiful Akiva moments. And I give you a money-back guarantee. Which is that even if you're unhappy about the circumstances of your life, which we all have circumstances with which we are unhappy, if you lead an Akiva life, you lead a Sha'achas life, you take advantage of your opportunities, you recognize the beautiful moments, we will become happy people. But I just want to end off with two practical suggestions. First of all, just to give you an illustration of this. You know, I read an amazing story. In 2001, there was the terror attack in Sbarro's Pizza. So if you know, again, if you're familiar with the Ein Yerushalayim, right by the intersection, right by the town, Ben Yehuda area. So now it's no longer a Sbarro's, it's a bakery now. But it used to be a Sbarro's, and a terrorist walked in, blew himself up, killing 14 people, injuring over 100. And it was a family that was having lunch that day in the restaurant. Family that had made Aliyah from Amsterdam. The Shaivis Khuder family. And the parents, Mati and Sira, were there with six of their children. Raya, Avram Yitzchak, Chemda, Leah, and Chaya. And in that terror attack, Raya, Avram Yitzchak, and Chemda were killed. The parents were killed. And Leah and Chaya were injured, seriously injured. And Rabbi Lau, in his biography, writes something amazing. He said that after that terror attack, he was going to visit some of the people who were injured. And he walked into a room of a 15-year-old girl. And she just began to cry uncontrollably. And he said to her, he said, what is it? Tell me. She said, you know, I was there, was the last day of school, or right after the last day of school, and I was there with my friends. And right next to us was a young family, such beautiful little children. The explosion occurred. She said, I was thrown from the table. I felt like I was on fire. And I found myself lying on the floor, totally disoriented. But there's one thing I heard. I heard a father calling out to his children, saying, children, give me your hands and say Shema Yisrael out loud with me. That was Mati Shabbos Choder. Saying Shema with three of his children before they died. That's Yesh Kana Olama B'Sha'achas. That's what it means. That no matter how difficult or overwhelming your circumstances are, you figure out the way to maximize them. You figure out a way to pull something even out of the most horrific circumstances. Did he have to do that? He and his children would have died of Al Kiddush Hashem even without the Shema Yisrael. But clearly this Kadosh, clearly this holy man realized that this was the moment that he was in, his final breaths. He was telling his beloved children, let's maximize the moment to whatever we can. This is our Shah, this is our moment, not the moment we chose. Not the moment we would ever choose, not the moment we could have ever imagined. But this is where we are. Let's maximize it, let's take something from it. This is what it means to be an Akiva Jew. To look for your moments. Seize your moments. Take advantage of your moments. No matter when and where they may arrive. And I just want to end with one last piece. I know that our time is coming to an end. I want to end with one practical application. If you look at number 10 on your sheet, the Torah says, "Ish ki yidor neder la'Hashem, o ish avah shvu'a le'esor isar al nafsho, lo yachel devaro." Person, if they make a vow or they make an oath to prohibit something, lo yachel devaro, literally do not violate your word. Kichol hayotze mipiv ya'ase. Everything you say, you should carry through on and you should do. So the truth is, the pasuk, the verse is redundant. Because once the verse says, lo yachel devaro, that my word should not become profane, I shouldn't violate my word, then obviously it means I have to keep my word. So why does the Torah have to say both? Why does it have to say, don't profane your word, and also keep your word? Just tell me one or the other, and I get it. I understand what it is that the Torah is trying to convey. And the Mefarshim go in all different directions. Rashi says over lo yachel devaro, in number 11, Rashi says, "Kimo lo yichalel dvaro, lo yaseh dvar chulim." They're perhaps going to Rashi, what the Torah is teaching us is that speech is a gift. And if you talk and you don't fulfill, if you promise and you don't carry through, if you say, but words don't really have meaning, it's not just that you're not fulfilling your word, but you're making your entire gift of speech into something that is profane and empty. But perhaps there's another meaning here as well. Look at number 12. This is an amazing medrash. The Medrash writes, "Ma'aseh bi'isha achas b'tzidon, sheshasa im baila yudsham v'lo yalda." Medrash tells a story of a woman who lived in Sidon. Sidon was part of biblical Israel. Now it's part of Lebanon. She was married to a man for 10 years, and they didn't have children. Bikesh lagarsha. So they decided they were going to get divorced. It's a concept like this in Jewish law, not applied today. But a concept like this, that if a couple can't have children for 10 years, it must mean that the match, for whatever the reason, is not going to yield offspring. So both husband and wife should try to be able to enter into a relationship that is going to yield children. So they decide to get divorced. Bo'u eitz Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. They came to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Chayecham shalon is dav, kishem shalon is dav, lon is dav gatem, elo mitoch machal mishta. Kach lo sifrodu zemize elo mitoch machal mishta. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has a very strange suggestion. It's fine, you want to get divorced, okay. But here's what has to happen. The same way when you got married, there was a party, there was a wedding. You should make a party now also. Okay, so invite your friends, have a nice smorgasbord, open bar, right? And invite everybody there, and we'll do the get afterwards. They listen. Holchu va'asi suda beveis ha'ish. They made the suda in the man's house. Ad shem ochlin v'shosim. So listen to this. As another version of the Medrash, you know, everybody went home. And it's just the man and woman left there together. And while they're eating and drinking, probably a lot of drinking, Amar la biti kol chayfetz tov sha'at roa b'day zeh tili u'lechi l'beis avich. You know, this couple, they love each other. So he says to his soon-to-be ex-wife, listen, whatever you see in the house that you want, take it. Whatever you want, take it. You know, you've been a very wonderful wife. These are circumstances beyond our control. Take it. Kevan Shishama. It's okay. She said, thank you. Ramza la'avdeha la'ashkira. She signaled the butler to refill the husband's cup with more wine. He drank and drank and drank. Shasa v'yashinlo. And he fell asleep. Tzivsa la'avadeha v'alichu b'mita. Ach yashin l'beis aviha. She commanded the servant to take her servants to take the husband who was sleeping in his bed, lift up his bed. She was moving back to her father's home. Lift up the bed and bring it to my father's home. Hikits mishnasa, he wakes up. First of all, waking up in your in-law's home without warning is traumatic by itself, right? So hikits mishnasa, he wakes up. Haya mistakel biksalim ba'amudim amrla heichin ani nasun. Where am I? He has no idea, where am I? So Amrlo, she said to him, Halo tiskar, masha amarta li mi'erev. Don't you remember what you told me last night? Kol chayfetz tov sha'at roa bebayis hazeh, kichi ulechi ladei savich. You told me that I could take anything that was precious to me to my father's home. You told me I could choose whatever I want from the house and I could take it with me. Right, you see, I looked around the house and I realized there was nothing I wanted more than you. It is you I want more than anything else in the home. Listen how the Medrash ends. Bo'u eitzel Rabbi Shimon v'sapru lo ha'maisa. They came back to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. They told him what happened. And what happened? V'nispaktu. And a little while later, they were blessed with a child. What's the Medrash telling us? What's happening over here? Sometimes, we don't use our words to lift up the other. This couple, they were in love with each other. This couple, they treasured each other. But you know what's clear from the Medrash? What's clear from the Medrash is something that many of us struggle with, which is, my spouse knows how I feel about them. Why do I have to say it? Because you have to say it. What's happening in this Medrash is a couple that was clearly in love. But a wife never told her husband how she felt about him. A husband, perhaps, never told the wife how he felt about her. And because of that, there was something missing in their marital dynamic. Because of that, there was a certain element of love that, although it perhaps was present on some emotional level, because it was never articulated, because it was never spoken out, they never felt it from each other. Words create beautiful, positive new realities. In fact, if you look at number 13, the last source on the sheet, Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch says this is the meaning in the pasuk. Ilu ne'emar kan lo yichalel devaro. Hayapirush al yases devaro chulin. Skip a little bit. Ach ne'emar, second line. Lo yachel devaro. Says Rav Hirsch, what does it mean lo yachel devaro? Uperusho al yishar es devaro bilo totsa'a. Rav Hirsch says the word lo yachel devaro does not mean don't misuse your speech. It means don't allow your speech to remain inactive. Don't allow your speech to remain a buried treasure. You see, whenever we speak about speech, we are so fixated on the avoidance of negative speech. Now, I'm all for the avoidance of negative speech. Right? We're all on the same page. No lashon hara, no rechilos, everything. There's another often overlooked dimension, which is the power of positive speech. How you can use your words to actively lift up another. How you could use your words to help another feel good about themselves. How you could use your words to literally transform the life of another. And the amazing part is, it takes virtually no time because we're very busy. And it takes virtually no financial investment because Baruch Hashem, we are stretched in all different directions. No time, no money, and you have an endless supply of an incredible tool to make people feel better about themselves. In a marriage, how often does it happen? Spouses mess up. No husband, no wife is perfect because we are human beings. And how often does it happen that in those moments when a spouse messes up, oh boy, are they going to get it. I am going to let them know exactly what they did wrong, how they did wrong. And by the way, it's not just going to be once. Right? It's going to be today, tomorrow, and when we argue about something in 5 years from now that is somehow related to this, it's going to come up again. But yet when my spouse does something good, oh, thanks, honey. Thanks. And it's forgotten the next hour, and it's forgotten the next day, and it simply disappears into the sands of time. We could build stronger marriages if we go ahead and we take the time not to deconstruct one another. It is easy to be critical, especially if you're unhappy about something with yourself. It's so easy just simply to project all of that personal unhappiness onto the other and deconstruct them. But instead, use your words to build up your spouse. And you'll have a happier marriage. How often does it happen with our children? Children are not perfect. And even those parents who say that their children are perfect, they know deep down those kids are not perfect either. Do we take the necessary time to build our children up through positive reinforcement? If my child did not succeed in the way I wanted them to succeed, but they succeeded to the best of their abilities. Sometimes what my child could do is not what I want them to do. It's a difficult moment in parenting. But I use my words to go ahead and build them up. I use my words to go ahead and make them feel good about themselves. I use my words to make them feel safe and secure in my love for them. And they should always know that I don't love you because of what you could accomplish. I don't love you because of your report card. I don't love you because of your scholarships. I don't love you because you are on honor roll or you made the dean's list or you got into this seminary. That's not why I love you. I love you because you're my child. I love you because I care about you. I love you because HaKadosh Baruch Hu entrusted your neshama to me. And it's my job to polish it. It's my job to nurture it, to nourish it. That's why I love you. With our friends, do we remember how often our friends come through for us? Or do we just simply remember the times when they didn't? Do you remember all the little things that a friend does that often we forget about right after the good deed is done? But yet when they don't live up to those friend expectations, how we remember it? Are we quick to criticize other streams of the Jewish people? My children know that if there is one thing that is not tolerated at the Shabbos table, it's negative talk about any other Jew. I don't care if they're Haredi. I don't care if they're conservative. I don't care if it's a Hasidic Rebbe or a female rabbi. It is so easy to use our words to deconstruct the other. It is so easy to use our words to speak cynically of the other. Yes, are there problems within our people? Of course there are. Are there things that are done within different streams of Judaism, both to the right and the left, that perhaps we may not agree with? Absolutely there is. But at the end of the day, focus on that which is good. Use your words to build. And I want to take it a step further. You know, a little while ago, I think it was last summer, in the aftermath of the Three Boys, you know, we launched a communal campaign to say Good Shabbos. And I want to be honest, I thought that we set the mark a little bit low. That's our big communal project, say Good Shabbos? We're telling people you should say hello to each other? Is that really where we're holding? No, that's taken for granted. That of course you say hello for Shabbos. Of course you say Good Shabbos. I don't know, maybe I'm from a small town in New Jersey. These things seem a little bit more obvious to me. Of course you say hello. Of course you greet the other. But we take it a step further. How good would it be if we tried to forge relationships outside of our immediate social circles of people who are just like us? And especially within the observant community, the incredible privilege and opportunity we have to demystify Judaism for others who may see us sometimes as a little bit standoffish, a little bit to ourselves, and a little bit uninterested in anyone other than our own community. What a beautiful opportunity. I want to tell you an amazing story. I know I'm going late, I apologize, but this will really end. When I was in Eretz Yisrael just a few weeks ago, I was davening Kabbalah Shabbos at the Kotel, and we were trying to get a minyan together. And there was a young man who walked in. Okay, look Jewish, it's good enough for me. Said, do you want to daven Kabbalah Shabbos? Actually, I said just Kabbalah Shabbos. You know, the famous Friday night greeting, Kabbalah Shabbos. That's an invitation. He said, no, I don't learn Kabbalah. I said, no, I'm sorry, let me explain. I'm not inviting you to learn Kabbalah. You know, we're welcoming the Sabbath. You know, there's a special prayer service. Would you like to be part of our minyan? And he's proceeded to tell me a little bit about his background. He's a Jewish boy from Missouri. And he said to me after davening, he said, I'm so honored that you asked me to be part of the minyan. I'm so honored that you gave me this privilege. Now, I was embarrassed because the truth is we were just looking for a 10th guy. And whether it was him or someone else, whatever it is. But I've learned such an incredible lesson. That with a simple invitation to join a minyan, which to us is no big thing, to this young man, it made him feel as if he was part of the club. It made him feel as if he was part of the Jewish people. This is a Shah Achos opportunity we have. Use your words. Let us use our words to lift each other up. The next time you're ready to be cynical or critical, take a deep breath. Compose yourself for just a moment and ask yourself a simple question. How could I transform these words of critique into something positive? Or if I have to be critical, can I first go ahead and lay the groundwork with a compliment and then give the critical feedback that is necessary afterwards? There's a Shah Achas moment in speech for each and every one of us. Because not every single, but so many moments throughout the day, we're interacting socially with others. And we have so many beautiful opportunities to build the other up. I'm not going to stand here and tell you what you should do. But perhaps something to consider. Give yourself a compliment quota every day. I am mekabel upon myself to hand out 10 compliments. 5 to my family, 5 to non-family. Whatever you want. I'm going to go ahead and make sure to say 6 nice things to people who are not like me. I'm going to go out of my way to people I've had an abrasive relationship with before, who I've been critical of, and I'm going to smother them with sweetness and with kindness and positivity. Do you know why we lost the Beis HaMikdash? We lost it because of Sinas Chinam. Simply because we were unwilling or unable to get along with each other. Now, do you know what that means? That means the ability to get our third Beis HaMikdash is within our grasp. You don't have to learn the whole Torah. You don't have to give away all of your money to tzedakah. You don't have to go out and do chesed until you're mamish totally physically, spiritually, and emotionally depleted. We just have to be nice. We just have to be kind. We just have to use our shah achas moments, our speech, which is so easy, and just use it to lift up another. So to end, today is the day where we feel Mashiach in our midst. It is true we cry. It is true we have mourned for that which is lost. But the wind has Mashiach. And the winds of Mashiach are blowing all around us. If you want Ribono Shel Olam to deposit that beautiful baby, Menachem ben Chizkiyah, within our midst, if we want Gula, if we want redemption, if we no longer want to cry, if we no longer want to live with a collective and individual broken heart, then we have to become Akivas. We have to become Yeshkana Olamo B'Sha'achas people. We have to not spend our time lamenting the circumstances we did not want, and instead expend our energy and our abilities to maximize the circumstances we have. We have to keep an open eye for the beautiful Sha'achas moments that present themselves all of the time, and find the courage to seize them, take advantage of them, and utilize them. We have to look for simple opportunities all around us to improve ourselves, to improve our people. Simple opportunities like the way we use our speech to maximize our moments and to make a difference. And let us hope that, first of all, in the merit of coming together to learn today, and I'm in awe of all of you, because in the midst of a hot Tisha B'Av afternoon, when everyone's tired, everyone's already dragging along, all of you Nashim Tzidkaniyos come out to learn Torah. I happen to think that even if I said nothing today, the zechus generated for Klal Yisrael by all of you coming out, I think, should be enough to tip the scales. But if it's not, let's use the lessons we learned today. Let's become Akivas. Let's tip the scales. And let us hope that in Yirtz Hashem, this will be the last Tisha B'Av that we observe in Avelus. Let us hope that in Yirtz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see how sincere we are in our desire to love one another, to build up one another. How sincere we are in our desire to maximize and to utilize our moments. How sincere we are in our desire to maximize all of our circumstances. And let us hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will finally see fit to say, Dai Litzareinu, it's been enough for our suffering. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will finally feel that we are deserving. He should allow, he should release the Melech HaMashiach. Our tears should be dried. Our hearts should be mended. And then we should be zocha to welcome the Melech HaMashiach, Mehera B'Yameinu. Amen.